Off the Ball, GAA.
Honestly, I wouldn't have put Mark as the manager type. Now, Mark's been extremely, he's always been an extremely smart player, but in terms of that management role, I possibly would have seen him as a coach.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Inside the Odds on Off the Ball with NoviBet. Get up to 50% boost on all bet builders with NoviBet. Download and play today. 18 plus, see gamblingcare.ie.
All right, you're very welcome along to this week's episode of Inside the Odds. It's our Premier League preview show here on Off the Ball in association with NoviBet. The fixtures this weekend all centred around the FA Cup final on Saturday. Saturday, 3 o'clock kickoff, Manchester City versus Chelsea, back to its traditional time, which I think we can all get behind. In the Premier League, the Friday night fixture is Aston Villa against Liverpool, which is, weirdly enough, actually really important for Villa. Man United versus Forest is 12:30. Is that a Sunday fixture? So there's no Saturday fixtures?
No, there's no.
Grant, that's right. I thought initially that was a Saturday, and I was going to make the point that if you are watching football at 12:30 on Saturday morning, the only thing that you should be watching is Hearts and Celtic at Parkhead. But anyway, these are all Sunday fixtures. Obviously, the standalone fixtures, the FA Cup final on Saturday, from an English perspective. Brentford Palace, Everton Sunderland, Leeds Brighton, Wolves Fulham, Newcastle West Ham, Arsenal Burnley, which is Monday night, which is live and off the ball, Bournemouth versus Man City next Tuesday, and then we also have Chelsea versus Spurs, which, depending on how things go for West Ham, may or may not be interesting. We're going to start with the FA Cup final, which is the game of the week, which means it is the game that NoviBet will offer up to a €10 free bet if your bet builder loses on the biggest game of the weekend. Every weekend, NoviBet are offering the best value on football betting with a risk-free bet builder on all the biggest Premier League and Champions League matches. It is also the game of the week for our bet builder, which Mick has picked. He was one leg off last week. He had Jokeres to score. I don't think he has it here. Big one, because Jokeres didn't come close to scoring. Did he not have a good chance early? Was there not one chance?
It was such a poor game that I just, you know,
immediately men and blacked it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
The VAR incident took up the whole of my memory.
Mind. Yeah, it's all I've thought about since I've thought about no intricacies of the game. I've actually even slightly forgot about Fernandez's miss as well. I kind of got reminded of that about an hour before we started recording this. So,
This week we've gone for a Manchester City dominated FA Cup final. Man City to win the trophy, over 1.5 Man City goals. Erling Haaland, anytime goal scorer. And Jeremy Doku with over half an assist. So he was one assist or more. Comes in at 11-2. So obviously Man City are heavy favourites for this.
Yeah. Yeah. Doku's been in some great form over the last little while.
Sorry, I did bad. Hello, Matthew. Hello, David.
Thank you.
We've almost just continued our conversation pre-recording, which is fine. Yeah. How are you getting on, Jer?
I'm good. You know, concerned about Liverpool and then Freiburg after Villa's horrific performance last week. Yeah, it was excellent. It's great. We're drawn 2-2 with Burnley, having been 2-1 up. Anyway, sorry, not to hijack things again.
No.
Man City.
Yeah, I don't know, like, kind of from a bit of reading beforehand, like, people are kind of tipping this to be one of the most one-sided FA Cup finals in a while.
Remember they did that one time for a Manchester City FA Cup final all those years ago? Vincent Kompany himself thought it would be very one-sided, but Wigan beat them in 2013.
They did, and then even more recently Man United were completely written off in that FA Cup final, and somehow they went and won that game. Garnacho and Kobbie Mainoo scored, but I don't know, I can't see,
maybe Garnacho will do it again.
I doubt it. I think he's had one of the worst seasons of any new signing this year. He's been absolutely deplorable, but I know Man City, they're the first team to play in 4 consecutive FA Cup finals. They've lost to Palace, they lost to Man United, obviously won in 2023 against Man United as well, so surely this is, you know, they rested even a couple of players last night. Phil Foden looked like he got back into a bit of form as well on Wednesday night as well. One unbelievable assist, and then obviously he got the assist for Marmoush as well. I just can't see any way where Chelsea get anything in this game. Like, they threw 1-1 last week against Liverpool away from home, but like, that is a pretty poor Liverpool team.
Yeah, it is. I'm looking at City's team from last night there, and even the players that we've sort of, like Semenyo the last couple of weeks hasn't been brilliant. He hasn't been having the form that he did when he first initially went over in January himself to get on the score sheet last night. Savinho the same, Omar Marmoush too. Like, these are players that haven't been setting the world alight in the last couple of weeks, so coupled in with the fact you're going to be bringing in some of the guys who have been keeping you ticking over and have gotten them back into the title race, that can only be a good thing. And as you say, I'm looking at the defence there as well. I just really struggle to see a path to victory for Chelsea here. The only thing that would make you think Chelsea can win is the fact that they spent so much money over the last 5 years. And if you've watched any form of Chelsea over the last 5 years, you kind of would immediately write that off.
Yeah. You know what Chelsea's last win against Man City was? The Champions League final in 2021.
Wow.
13 game winless run against Man City. It's the longest against any opponent since going 17 without a victory against Arsenal between January 99 and March 2004.
What a stat.
It's their longest since
Chelsea's longest winning run against an opponent
since Arsenal
between January 99 and March 2004. It was a pretty good Arsenal team back then as well.
The turn of the millennium.
Yeah.
So that must come to an end.
Well, that's true.
Man City don't beat Chelsea 14 times in a row, do they?
I feel like Pep has somewhat moved off this thing of overthinking finals. I don't think he does it too much anymore. But then again, he might do it. They did lose the final last year, of course, but I don't think that was solely down to the fact that he put a player somewhere that they shouldn't have been. I think they'll be fine. I really do. I haven't been impressed at all by Chelsea. And I'm not having a bar at these Chelsea players either. Whatever about the managers, Rossini was in out of his depth there. Was out of his depth, absolutely, when he was running the show. But these players are flaky at best.
They are flaky, right?
They are, Kate, and I know what you're going to say here, yeah.
Flaky players are going to respond. So to tease out the scenario in which Chelsea do win this, what happens? Man City get somebody sent off?
Yeah, early doors maybe.
I
think Mateo style goal.
There was a lot of football on last night, but I watched the first 5 minutes of Man City and Crystal Palace, and Palace had two great chances.
Yeah.
Now, one of them was called back for offside. I'm not really sure.
It was a delayed
call. The graphic didn't show up, right?
It was a delayed call for sure.
And was the ball over the line?
Yeah, close.
There was an angle of it that looked like it was over the line.
Yeah.
And then there's another chance after that. And that's Palace, that's their third team as well, because they obviously have the Conference League final to play for and they didn't care about it. Chelsea's first team will have stronger attacking talent than Palace did. Granted, it wasn't Man City fully on it, but they did have to win that game.
Yeah,
I think that Man City will give up chances.
Yeah, and they have done. Even last night after the City Palace game, I saw Micah Richards describe City as relentless. I was not sure what City team he's been watching over the last few weeks. They've been stodgy. Burnley could have easily taken a point, a terrible Burnley team that were relegated on that night after City had beaten Arsenal. They could have taken a point easily in that game. Yeah, they've been okay-ish, obviously, to drop points against Everton where they completely collapsed. The City team isn't the City team of what it was, in Guardiola's peak, obviously. But I don't know.
I think they just have a bit too much firepower more than anything. Their defence is grand. There's some good players there who've been performing well when they've had to. But I think that Chelsea, I just don't need them Chelsea players to have the mentality to go out and do this. And as I say, they're flaky and they might turn up for the big day in front of the big crowd when the cameras are on them. Cameras are always on them. They're a big Premier League team. But you're right in saying that City haven't been the City that we have become accustomed to over the last decade, in that they're not this relentless machine that is robotic in that sense. And the only reason really that they're properly still in a title race, if you can call it that now, with two games to go, Arsenal would seriously have to slip up, but City are only 2 points behind, is because Arsenal have let them back in a few different times.
Yeah.
And that's on Arsenal, as opposed to there's more kind of to be taken away from Arsenal than there is to be given to City there. I think. And as you say, it's a cup final, anything can happen. And Chelsea are obviously in with a puncher's chance, and maybe slightly more than a puncher's chance.
You play this game 100 times, Man City are going to win 90 of them, is how it feels at the moment. Yeah. But that's not how life works, right?
No.
So I'm looking through the suggested teams. They're not bad.
You're on about the Chelsea defence there, and two players that they might have back is Reece James and Levi Colwill. Those two players that make a serious difference. I wouldn't trust any of those Chelsea central defenders at the minute. Fofana, Badiashile, Tosin, they're grand.
They would all be better with somebody good beside them.
Yeah.
They look like good players who have not had a year of coaching.
Yeah. I think they're the types of defenders that when we looked at Liverpool, that under Klopp, and they were so good, and it was Van Dijk plus one other.
Yeah.
All of them would be perfectly serviceable others.
Yeah. I don't know about that. I don't know about Badiashile or Tosin. But the one thing is, though, Reece James has X Factor. He has
an amazing footballer.
He was brilliant until he suffered, you know, the injuries again. And he was brilliant under Maresca, especially. Obviously, Maresca then leaves, and then Rossini kind of, he kind of started getting injured around then. And he can be a game changer for sure.
Absolutely. And the thing with Reece James as well is that when he does get injured and he comes back, there's no bedding in period with him. He comes back and he's electric.
Yeah.
And then he gets injured again. And that's a horrible thing for a player of his talent. Yeah. But maybe that's just the way he is. That's his build. That's just the way his career is going to pan out. But there's never a case of when you see Reece James come back from injury and he plays a game, you never think, he looks a bit off the pace here. He's immediately back up to speed. But then, unfortunately, he does tend to pick up injuries. And maybe there's a reason for that. Maybe he does need one of these bedding in periods.
Yeah.
But again, we don't know if he's going to be back either. That's the thing.
Yeah, look, there is a debate about the goalkeeping situation as well, and whether or not Sanchez is going to be back from concussion. So I suppose there are a lot of questions, right? And I am definitely playing devil's advocate here when it comes to talking about this, but the suggested teams are one of the two goalkeepers, Gusto at right back, Fofana, Caldwell and Hato, James playing in midfield along Caicedo, which allows Fernandez to play much further forward and be a bit of a thorn in the side of that City defence, which has been good but not impregnable. And then you've got Cole Palmer and Cucurella playing further up to maybe negate some of the attacking threats that City have with Joao Pedro up front. It's not a great team, but if they were all playing well, you'd be like, and they have won a series of big knockout games inside the last 12 months.
Yeah.
Well, the Club World Cup.
Big-ish.
Yeah. Conference League.
As big as you make them.
Yeah,
they were all getting paid extra money to win it.
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure, yeah. The Conference League, I wouldn't be reading into it at all because majority of these players weren't even playing in it.
Yeah. the thing is, like as well, Enzo Fernandez, like he could have a game where he's brilliant. Cole Palmer doesn't look like he looks like he needs a summer off. I'm not sure if he makes England World Cup squad because he's just been stodgy with his form, his injury. He looks like he's been suffering with this injury for quite a while now. He could probably do some time off. And the other thing is Joao Pedro, like, you know, even that game against Forest where they were comfortably beaten, obviously scores an unbelievable goal. There's another goal ruled out for offside, but he can definitely cause problems. He'll probably have to play 90 minutes plus. I wouldn't trust Liam Delap to come on and do anything really. But then this could be the game where Liam Delap maybe does something against, you know, his boyhood club, I guess, and you know, scores a winner. Like, he's been pretty poor all season, but then maybe he does something at the weekend. But
you'll be inspired by the fact he's missing out on Ireland's game against Grenada, which will be about to kick off come the end.
Yeah.
It's the first thing he'll check after he's in the dressing room, isn't it?
100%.
Who started up front?
The Cole Palmer thing is interesting about the England World Cup squad. They do have an abundance of options there, but I'm thinking you're looking in that position where does Thomas Tuchel is funny as well. He tends to see players differently than maybe the rest of us do as far as position and how they're going to contribute to his teams. But you're looking there and he's kind of in direct competition with Morgan Rodgers,
Jude Bellingham,
Morgan Gibbs-White, who seems to be in a bad way but would probably be all right for the summer.
Yeah.
You're looking at, I know Rashford's not a 10, but they're Palmer's played off the left for England. There's a lot of options there.
Yeah.
So he could do with doing something, you know. But he has performed for England. Mm. He has the goal European Championship final, smashing goal. It'll be interesting to see. It's an interesting point, though, because he has looked. If I didn't know any better, I would say he looks injured.
Yeah.
But I don't. Maybe that's the wrong way of putting it. If I didn't know any better, I don't know if he's injured or not, but he looks like he's not playing to his full potential regardless, and I just wonder if that maybe is because he's not up to full fitness.
No, and it looks like he's trying to angle for that move as well. He doesn't seem particularly happy in London at the minute.
There's a lot of that with these Chelsea players, isn't there? There's always talk.
Well, that's because they're badly run.
Talk. Yeah. I want to go, I want to move, blah, blah, blah.
Fish rots from the head.
Yeah.
Cucurella was very strong about Maresca staying, and Maresca obviously had that fight with the board, and maybe if they'd kept Maresca, none of this would have happened because they weren't having a horrific season when he was there. It was fine. It just wasn't explosive. They were still qualifying for the Champions League.
Yeah. They were in, you know, a couple of points of the league title. Remember, there was a time where Arsenal went to Stamford Bridge and there was a chance for Chelsea if they'd turn them over, like they would have been right in the title race. They didn't. Yeah, I don't know. Just interesting as well, can I just say Erling Haaland's record in finals? Looking to score in a final for Manchester City for the first time. He's played 9 finals if you include Community Shields. 15 shots without success. His last goal in the final was for Borussia Dortmund against RB Leipzig in May 2021 in the German Cup final when he scored twice.
He's a choker, is that what you're saying?
A little bit, yeah.
He is till he isn't.
Yeah.
Hat-trick incoming. Yeah. I suppose he missed a... He didn't take the penalty against Palace last year, weirdly.
Yeah, that was...
Marmoush took it.
Yeah.
And missed.
Yeah.
That was strange. That maybe feeds into your point. Why is he not taking it?
Yeah.
Surely he should be taking it. I mean, he did take a bang actually for the penalty, didn't he? It was him that won it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get that with some players though. You do, that they don't, when it comes to it, and it's... And I don't know, is there necessarily a reason for that? I mean, Haaland is City's most threatening player, you would say. I mean, over the last couple of weeks, Doku, obviously you need to tie him up, but
yeah,
as far as goals go, Haaland's your man.
Yeah.
So there obviously is more of an emphasis on keeping him quiet. So yeah, that would obviously feed into that fact, but finals are always cagey as well. It's rare you see a lot of goals in finals.
Yeah.
So he is part of our bet that Mick McCarthy made, who's not here to defend himself, but I wish you had told him that in advance. Mm. Man City to win the trophy, over 1.5 Man City goals, Erling Haaland anytime goal scorer, and Jeremy Doku with over half an assist that comes in at 11-2. And obviously, that's the Novi Bet game of the week, which means they offer up a €10 free bet if your bet builder loses. We are predicting a Man City win. A routine Manchester City victory.
I don't know if a final victory can be routine. Obviously, the routine victories do. Yeah, they do tend to happen, but I don't think you can ever
predict them.
I don't think you can envisage a routine victory. I think it can pan out that way.
Yeah,
it can pan out that way. Listen, I've spent the last, 20 minutes here not giving Chelsea much of a chance. It's a cup final. I think it happened.
Final.
Of course they've got a chance.
It's a cup final.
Of course they've got a chance, but I see City being too strong. I don't think they'll be able to handle Doku. I really don't think they'll be able to handle Doku.
Just maybe to round up on Garnacho, obviously scored against City in the 2024 FA Cup final for Man United, but no player scored an FA Cup final against an opponent for two different teams. The only players to score against an opponent in two different finals, excluding replays, are Blackburn's Jimmy Forrest against Queen's Park in 1884 and 1885.
Remember it well.
And Liverpool's Ian Rush against Everton in 86 and 89. So there's a bit of history there for Garnacho.
I do remember that. This is a horrible after timing, but it's more by way of advocating that people check the social media of celebrating teams who have either survived relegation or won the title. Last week, video emerged on the Thursday of Schalke on a boat.
Oh, yeah.
They were celebrating wildly. It's fair to say there was a few light ales on board, literally and metaphorically, and they were playing Nuremberg in the league on the Saturday. So I was like, well, they're definitely going to win. So Nuremberg did do that. Put them in a double with Barcelona to beat Real Madrid, which was obvious after the Valverde stuff had come out, and that came in at about 2-1. But there are definitely teams who are on the beach. I got criticised during the week for suggesting that Leeds might be on the beach, and in fairness to them, they weren't.
Yeah,
but there are definitely teams on the beach where the odds reflect what's happened over the season as opposed to the fact that teams are finished. Now, I don't know what happened Burnley last week.
There is that. There are teams.
Freedom.
Yeah, like I would look at Leeds and I would say they're a team who are on paper on the beach. They have the hallmarks of what being on the beach is.
Mm.
But the actual makeup of their team and the setup and everything that they've been good at, I just don't see. I wouldn't have thought that Spurs would roll them over, or they'd roll over for Spurs. But I know what you mean. There's 100%. There's opportunities there as far as you look at the odds and all that sort of stuff for teams that 100% opens up itself as well. You find it very much in like the lower leagues and the Championship at League One, where teams are got 4 or 5 games to go. They're not making the playoffs. They're not going down. They ain't winning a game before the season's up. You know.
Yeah. Well, we had Byron Murphy on briefly before his phone line dropped a couple of weeks ago, and he was like, "Look, I can't in all honesty tell the team that this weekend's game is just as important as all the other ones because
they look at you like you're an idiot," is what he said.
Yeah, and I actually didn't check the result that weekend, and I certainly didn't bet on it stupidly. Even though you're like, "Oh, you've just told us
literally."
And it's not that they're being unprofessional; it's just that they.
Well, to be fair, their last. Sorry, that's the wrong way.
There was a 5-4 the following week.
Okay, so they. So I don't know when exactly we had them on, but their last four games, they won 3-1, 1-1-0, 1-5-1. And then the 5-4 was the last day of the season. So I think we had him on before the second last game.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it was the second, because I think he said about getting the players up for their last two games. I think that's what he said.
Okay.
So they had a win and a loss. But the last game of the season was mental. I remember that one. They were well down and came back. And then, anyway, beside the point, but the beach is definitely a real place.
Yeah, it is. But like, sometimes I think this time of the year it throws up like crazy results. Like, remember Manchester United drew at West Brom like 5-0.
Oh, Fergie's last game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a mad game where Spurs played Leicester and did they beat them 5-4 or 6-4 or something like that. It was like their last game of the season in Wembley. So like there's all sorts of...
Oh yeah, Vardy scored a couple of goals that day.
Yeah.
Or he was going for a golden boot or something.
Yeah, like. And it's all kind of... Yeah, it's hard to predict.
Kane scored a couple of goals.
Yeah. And some of these players though, like for Burnley, like even Burnley last week, like there's probably a couple of them players going, I wouldn't mind a move away from here. Like if I play well here and, you know, maybe some of the clubs that are coming up, like Coventry or Ipswich might take a punt on me or whoever, maybe between Hull and Southampton, like
or Middlesbrough.
Yeah, or Middlesbrough. But you know, like those players, it's a bit like you know like in the NFL where they have like those blowout games where teams can't reach the playoffs.
Mm.
But like some players try and do their utmost. And like again, you know, it's for moves or it's to like try and get an increase in your contract or whatever.
Yeah, and basic professionalism as well. That all feeds into it.
For sure, yeah.
Like top pros, you know.
Mm. Yeah, I think you can tell. It's not too difficult to look at a group and make up your own mind as to whether they'll be taking a game seriously or not.
Yeah, so I'm just saying there's opportunity out there if you can spot it, ideally on their socials where they're completely out of it. Yeah. And you're like, I'm taking that as evidence.
completely out of it, right. Yeah.
Where do you want to go next?
I suppose Villa-Liverpool.
Liverpool is most pressing, isn't it?
Yeah.
No. You're not feeling
Look.
I see Arne Slot is now staying, confirmed.
Well.
Is that good or bad news for Liverpool? Are the players going, oh.
I also see Harvey Elliott's coming back in for pre-season, according to Arne Slot, which is interesting considering he didn't seem to want to have a bar of him.
Yeah.
But Villa also didn't seem to want to have to play him enough so that they had to sign him.
No, you'd say it was disgracefully handled by both clubs where they could have surely had a negotiated thing. The loan fee is going to be whatever it is and he can play and get game time. And his value will stay as it is or decrease or increase or whatever. But like the bit where they just back themselves into corners going, no, you agreed to take him. Well, we don't want him anymore. Like, well, we're not going to pay you. It's like, oh, stop being dickheads. All he is.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, because he's lost a year of his career and he's 21, 22, 23.
Yeah.
What a waste of a promising young footballer. I don't know how good he is. Mm. I don't know would he have made much difference to Villa. They could have used an extra body in midfield. They've been really shorn. And Liverpool could have used a player who comes back to them next season with some Premier League and Europa League experience behind him as opposed to somebody who's like, you know, his reputation is enhanced as a human being but not as a footballer.
Yeah.
So they're all toxic dickheads. Apart from Harvey Elliott.
Yeah.
Who by all accounts has come, like showed up for work and been diligent and been a professional. So
yeah,
a plague on all their houses, I say. Yeah, and I say that as a Villa fan.
It's a horrible situation,
yeah.
A horribly dealt with situation.
Yeah, and he was quite, like, I don't think he wanted to leave Liverpool. Like, he's a big Liverpool fan. Okay, he grew up down south somewhere in England, but to have a year of your career when it's so short, taken away like that is...
Particularly at this stage where he's either going to make a leap or not.
Yeah.
And now he doesn't know if he's going to make the leap or not. Yeah. We've got... I can't really talk about this yet, but... We've got access to an Irish footballer recently who really benefited from learning about good loans and bad loans and the difference between those. And it's fascinating to hear them talk about it.
Mm.
And Harvey Elliott's just had a bad loan. And look, the truism that came out of it was sometimes you learn more from your bad loans than the good loans.
Yeah.
It's not linear either.
No.
It's for him at the stage of his career where he was at Fulham and then goes to Liverpool. He didn't need this.
No.
He could have avoided this, basically. This whole situation could have been avoided. When you talk about good loans, bad loans, sometimes players go somewhere and whatever, a manager doesn't fancy them and that season's over and they come back, whatever. Whereas with the Harvey Elliott situation, I'm kind of going, this is just a really unfortunate thing that's happened to a young footballer that... And again, maybe look, maybe there's a blame to lie with his agent or something that didn't
look into the situation properly.
I don't know.
You know, agents definitely looking out for the best for their player because ultimately
it suits them,
makes them more money,
beneficial thing.
That's the parasitic relationship that agents have with footballers. But like the two clubs could easily have hammered out a deal at particularly the second transfer deadline day. Gone right, this hasn't worked out.
It's
like, but the ego obviously on both sides got in the way.
Mm.
From somebody blinking and going, okay, Grant.
He would have had chances probably to go to Germany. You know, Germany is like a popular destination for young English footballers. You know, he could have played half a season.
He wouldn't have been without a club, anyway.
No, for sure. Like, but it's interesting what happened to him next season, and then. Like, will Slot try and reintegrate him into the team? I think Liverpool are just so low on bodies that they might have to.
Maybe, and maybe the financial constraints. It'll be interesting to see what financial constraints these clubs operate under, because we keep hearing about them and then they keep spending a quarter of a billion.
Yeah.
So look, this game, I actually have no clue what to expect. I think Villa's European Cup final, Europa League final is next Wednesday.
That's obviously why this game is on tomorrow, is it?
Yeah. Do you pick the team you're going to pick that night for the first 45 minutes and make five subs at halftime and hope that you get, like, there's still a scenario where they don't finish?
So that's what I was going to bring up to you there. Yeah, they're 4 points behind Bournemouth. Both teams are ahead of Bournemouth. Sorry, both teams have played the same amount of games.
Bournemouth have City, I think.
Yeah.
Got the same goal difference. Bournemouth have scored more goals. So they'll need another point, really, I suppose. I suppose they need another... Like, a win would do it for them, obviously.
I think they go and play this game like any other, attack the game from the start and try and beat this Liverpool team early on, because this is not a good Liverpool team. And I've been saying it for weeks now, and I do feel bad for some of the players and for the manager as well, like, because I just don't think it's going to work out long term for Liverpool. I think they're a bit stuck in the mud with what decision making they're kind of doing for next season. There's a manager there that's available that they would probably more than likely get in Xabi Alonso, and there looks like they're going to miss out on him, and they're going to give Slot one more year. I understand Slot won the league in his first season, and someone did say this in the Spotify comments in one of the, I think it was the episode last week or the week before, you know, that Slot should get more time, and because he's won the Premier League, and I get it, but like, there's been no evidence really, like, this past season that he should be given more time. Like, they've been poor, like really poor by Liverpool standards. Slot, you know when managers are kind of, you know, they're coming to the end and then they completely go against the things that they believe in, and that was never more kind of evidential than in that game against Paris Saint-Germain, where he played five of the back with wing backs, long throws, and okay, I understood he was trying to keep Liverpool in the game, but that said it all to me that he was finished as a Liverpool manager. Because that was completely the opposite of what he was trying to do and what he was talking about last season and for a lot of this season as well. I just don't really see how it kind of goes on from here. And a massive overturn of players as well. Maybe that's why you keep the manager, because the players, like, looks like Alisson, looks like obviously Salah is going to go. Maybe you need the manager there to kind of keep some sort of kind of consistency between squads and that. But I think this is like a rebuilding process for Liverpool, and it's going to take a year or two, but, you know, they probably should maybe rebuild with a different manager.
I do see a scenario where he picks the team that he wanted to pick, where it's Isak and Wirtz and your strong, hard-running midfield that makes up for the lack of pressing from those three. Your two fast fullbacks who've settled in and understand what the responsibilities are of the club. You add one more centre-back, and suddenly you get a bit more out of Van Dijk, because actually he's still Virgil van Dijk. And that team's pretty good. Obviously, the injuries have proven to be consistently an issue, and when that gets into a club, it's very hard to get it out. So how often will that starting 11 be available to him and be able to build some consistency of performance? You know, so I'd like to see what that looks like next season with no Salah and none of the sideshow. But I wouldn't be terribly surprised if it goes pear-shaped early.
Yeah. I can see him being sacked after 10 games next season.
Yeah, well, Liverpool will tell you they don't sack managers, but you might find be a bit of a blessing in disguise with Ekitike's injury. Obviously, they won't be happy that he's injured, but it kind of eliminates that problem that they gave themselves by signing both Isak and Ekitike.
Yeah. Which is mad when you think about it.
It's mad they did that, yeah. It obviously was. It's become pretty clear it was a case of, we're not sure if we're going to be able to get Isak out of Newcastle here. Yeah. So we're going to go and sign him as well.
Yeah.
And then did get Isak out of Newcastle. So,
but, yeah.
Like, you won't have to worry about that at the start of next season, obviously, with the injury that Ekitike has, and that could benefit them. But as you say, I personally would lean towards having replaced him now. And you've got the worst thing, and we've seen this happen so many times, and there might be a world, and again, I don't think this is a good thing either, where they're around talking to other managers and saying, would you be interested in taking this job? We saw it with United with Ruben Amorim, and when Ten Hag won the cup that time, and it was like, okay, we want to get rid of him, but we're going to have a look around here and see really what we're going to do. And then they kept him and then got rid of him anyway. And then Amorim took the job at a time when he didn't want to take it. Yeah. And you don't want to, like...
That was a mess.
Yeah, it was. But Liverpool could find us having that exact same position now if things don't go well to start of next season. And saying that they might do. They might go really well. And that's the risk you take, I suppose.
That's why you get rid of the manager now. And you have the World Cup as well that's going to happen during the summer where more managers are going to become available. So...
Bournemouth are on a 16-game unbeaten run in the Premier League.
Crazy.
Bayern Munich and AC Milan are the only two other clubs in European football who have longer unbeaten runs. And obviously, Bayern Munich have a slightly higher budget in terms of their available selection of players.
In a slightly less competitive league.
Yeah, it's a fair point. It's a perfect point. And then Milan is, I don't know, we don't really know what's the crack.
Yeah, I do not know that.
Yeah, they've drawn a load of games.
Is that what it is?
They're still in the hunt for.
This is similar thing to is it Benfica at the minute or something? Are they unbeaten this season? But they're just
not
in the league.
In the league, like.
So, let me just posit this scenario.
Yeah.
It's a blowout FA Cup final. Man City win 4-0. Right? They've got a trophy.
I'm listening.
They accept that the league is done. It's Arsenal's, really. On Tuesday night, they've got to get their shit together and go to Bournemouth. And Bournemouth are like hunting down Aston Villa, who've been beaten by Liverpool at Villa Park, and who are totally distracted by the fact that all the eggs are in the Freiburg basket. They win that game. Their final game of the season is away to Nottingham Forest, who will already be safe and on the beach.
So that would put Bournemouth in the Champions League?
Yeah.
I'll give you an alternative scenario there.
And I'll finish in fifth.
I'll give you an alternative. Villa go and beat Liverpool.
Then I'm happy.
Yeah. But then does that mean Liverpool are going to miss out on the Champions League?
If my scenario happens, and I hadn't even bothered to look at Liverpool.
Villa and Liverpool are both on 59 points.
Yeah.
Liverpool's last game of the season is Brentford.
Brentford at home.
At home.
Like, wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah. There's Steve Andrews with a one game shootout to get to the Champions League.
Isn't the best thing that has ever happened, the fact that we don't know what's going to happen in the relegation zone, in the race for the Champions League, and in the title, and we've only got two games left. Yeah. When is the last time that has actually happened? I don't know. It's amazing, because the relegation battle for me is always, growing up, was always unbelievable and always really exciting, and that's maybe nostalgia tinted glasses or whatever going on there, where that might not be in the case, but that's my memory of it. Whereas in recent times, I have no real proper memory of that being the case. And everything to come towards the end of the season, the title was decided because City were so much better than everyone else. And then you're looking at the Champions League places and everyone tries to make out as if they're really excited about who's going to qualify for the Champions League, because it's the only thing that really has any kind of jeopardy to it. Obviously, teams that are involved and are interested in it, I get that 100%. But it's a false sort of thing. It's who's going to qualify for Europe. It's like, all right. Grant, typically, you shouldn't worry about who's in Europe until the European competition starts taking place the next year. You know, so I just think it's great that it's still a bit of there's a lot to be decided, and we've only got two games left.
Yeah, so if Villa and Liverpool draw, right? Say they were to have one of those Republic of Ireland versus
North Macedonia,
Holland draws. So they gentlemen's agreement at the start, and it's the most boring game of all time. No chances. XG of zero. They would obviously both then move from 58 to 59, right?
59-60,
sorry. Villa's last game is against Man City. I think Man City are going to win that, right? Will they?
You'd imagine to try and put pressure on...
what if they... Unless
City draw points to Bournemouth and Arsenal, then...
Well, in this scenario, they have to already have done that.
Yes, you're right, sorry. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And then Liverpool's final game is against Brentford, you were saying.
Yeah.
It is. They're at home to Brent.
Salah and maybe Alisson's last game.
Do they risk having a gentleman's agreement for the draw tonight and say one more point in the final day will actually keep Bournemouth at bay?
It would be fine for Liverpool because...
The goal difference.
They're ahead of Villa anyway. So it would be grand for them to finish on the same amount of points as Villa, as far as I'm looking at this here now. They've scored a considerably more amount of goals. Yeah, the goal difference is far better. So I don't know whether there'd be any benefit to Aston Villa in
taking
part in this gentleman's agreement. I reckon you go out there, you rattle Liverpool, you get a win, and you go absolutely humming into that Europa League final next week.
Now, the evidence of the Spurs game would suggest that's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's true.
They played their worst football of the season, particularly in the first 25 minutes when Spurs went 2-0 up. And then they had to bring on some of the players they didn't want to bring on. It was kind of embarrassing. And then they put their best performance of the season in against Forest.
And as far as that European final goes... I don't know the top four race. Like, you know, that could go wrong on them. That could go south. But Unai Emery will have them ready for that final. There is nothing sure in my mind that Europa League final with Unai Emery involved. Villa will give themselves absolutely every chance of getting that game won.
Yeah. He's the Europa League expert. The king of the Europa
That's
League.
His thing.
Unai Emery. Mm.
Some of those wins are on penalties. Yeah. You know,
psychologically.
Funny enough.
Yeah, but maybe he's practicing penalties, sure.
Yeah.
You can't practice. I keep getting told. Any of the other standout fixtures from the weekend you want to talk about? Man United versus Nottingham Forest. It's going to be the Carrick unfurling.
Yeah. The Carrick unfurling and the Casemiro goodbye. Casemiro didn't play last week. I think he had a minor knock. Just only because he wants to have his massive Old Trafford goodbye. And on behalf of all the Man United supporters.
You know the way they've all forgiven him for being shit for 18 months?
I think that's a revisionist statement. I think Casemiro in that time
when he was getting destroyed through the central midfield.
Yeah, because he was like playing like Erik ten Hag was doing this high press but with a deep lying back four because he had Harry Maguire there and Rafa Varane who had no legs, like, so.
And then decided the man he wanted with legs in the midfield was Casemiro. Yeah. That's no, not, I'm not playing Casemiro for that, but no, I'm saying it was just a structural, left them totally isolated.
Yeah, it was a structural deficiency in the team created by the manager.
It did feel a little bit like he was not as at it as he has been in his contract year this year.
I would say that's a fair judgment, I think. Yeah. I think you're bang on with the way in which Man United were set up was the absolute antithesis of how you get the better best out of Kantas.
You couldn't have the fittest central midfielder in the world playing in that system and covering 60 yards of room.
They didn't though.
Oh, taking out Pico and N'Golo Kante would have given it a go.
I don't know.
They didn't have anybody who was near his peak fitness.
Mm. No. But I don't know. From this season and even in the bad times as well, like,
my question is, do you not hold him in any way accountable for phoning it in for about 18 months in the middle of this contract?
No, I don't think he did.
When he was the highest paid player at the club. Was he the highest paid? 375? Is that what it was?
The money's irrelevant. They're all on massive wages.
I think all that money mattered. I think that the Pogba contract poisoned the well for everybody. There was a few of those contracts where lads who weren't trying were getting paid more than some of the players coming through. That's a poisonous atmosphere. Difficult for any manager to rescue.
True.
I think the money doesn't matter in terms of they will always be able to generate enough revenue to sign new players.
Yeah.
But I do think it matters when a washed up has been, I'm not saying that was him, but there were others are on mad money and your McTominays are like actually trying their eyeballs out.
Yeah. That comes from like the top. Like that comes from the director of football, the board. Like I think on the pitch, like Casemiro has been excellent. He plays in. He's going to be so hard to replace for Man United next season. He is crucial to what Kobbie Mainoo's form. Everyone's all about, Kobbie Mainoo's been excellent since he came in. He has been, but he's played pretty much nearly every game alongside Casemiro.
And to be fair, with Casemiro too, you have to remember as well, when he first came in, he was unbelievable.
Yeah.
He was actually ridiculous.
Him and Christian
Eriksen.
Scoring
Erickson. Huge goals in big games, Carabao Cup final. I think he scored a load of goals in that run to Carabao. He's scoring big headers, which he's doing again now.
Yeah.
But yeah, right, there was that period in the middle. But it coincided...
That's more a Manchester United problem. Though.
Yeah, it coincided with Ten Hag's... The wheels falling off Ten Hag. And I don't know if I would pin that on Casemiro to any great degree.
Yeah, well, Erik Ten Hag and Ruben Amorim have had great careers since leaving Man United, haven't they?
Well, Amorim's going to be gone about 6 months. Ten Hag is a more fair point.
Yeah, but like Ruben Amorim has been embarrassed by this version of Manchester.
Maybe he's off cooking up something special here. He's going to come back and take a team. And, you know.
Is he? I don't know. Like, United are going to have to obviously replace Casemiro. It's going to be extremely difficult to do that. It's a game for Man United fans, to the true Man United fans, the ones that go to Old Trafford and don't just watch it on
the top reds.
Yeah, like and they understand the impact that Casemiro has had, and he's been nice. I know Dion Fanning was on here a few months back, like, you know, criticizing him very heavily, and I felt he was wrong, like, because if you actually watch Casemiro, like, you know, week in week out, like, he does so many things for that Man United team. He played in one of the best midfields of all time alongside Toni Kroos and Luka Modric. You know, he probably doesn't make those players aren't as good as what they were, probably like Casemiro behind them.
That was his peak though.
That was his peak. And even
do you feel like Manchester United saw that?
No, definitely not, but not like his less than peak was a lot better than a lot of Manchester United midfielders have been for 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
It was also a pretty different Casemiro that we saw in the first year at United when he was great. Like that Real Madrid version of Casemiro, I don't remember marauding up the pitch and
He probably didn't need to.
But that's true, yeah. But we also didn't know that he had
Bernardo
that in him.
Bale and Benzema.
Yeah, we didn't know that he had him in him. But again, to your point, I wouldn't say that the Man United hierarchy and the scouts thought, oh, I see something casting over there. Let's bring him in and make him something different.
United had started that season really badly. They'd lost to Brentford and they'd lost to Brighton.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, they signed him. What are we going to do here? And then they sign him and he's paraded at, is it before the Liverpool game where Jadon Sancho scored and I think Rashford scored, that United won that game 2-1 on a Monday night. And like, it's like, oh, and then the United kind of rode that wave all the way to the EFL Cup final that year. They beat Newcastle in the final, small club in the Northeast. And then they go to Liverpool the next week and lose 7-0, and after that the wheels absolutely come off. But there's no excuse for that, to lose a game to your biggest rivals like that.
No.
Casemiro was an essential part of that.
Very briefly, the Newcastle West Ham game, I suppose, is actually probably the most important game on Sunday in terms of the outcome having a material impact. I think West Ham got a Newcastle win.
I'd be surprised if they didn't get something. That Newcastle away game is nowhere near as threatening or striking as much fear.
But then they beat Brighton a few weeks ago 3-1 all of a sudden. So
I wouldn't be surprised if they got something out of it, for sure.
I only saw the highlights of that, but it did look like it was one of those smash and grab 3-1s where
it was. And then even last week, like, this is just, I think last week's game against Nottingham Forest summed up Newcastle all season. Being ahead and dropping points. I don't think any other club has been ahead as much as Newcastle and dropped as many points as Newcastle. Whatever it is about the style of play that Eddie Howe has, whatever it is about the training, the confidence levels, the belief in the manager, the belief in some of the players, I'd be worried for Newcastle this summer. They're going to benefit from not having European football next year.
Bild are reporting that Gordon has already agreed a deal with Bayern.
Yeah.
I think they
need a striker more than just to give Harry Kane some relief.
I think it's a great move for Newcastle. They get very well paid for a player who hadn't scored. I think before he scored kind of early, around November time. I remember there's a stat where he hadn't scored in 25 games, where all his goals previous to that were all penalties. He's very streaky.
I would say, if the scouts from Bayern were looking at Newcastle and weren't looking at one of the three midfielders who's been there and going, that guy would actually improve our team as opposed to that guy.
Yeah.
Maybe they have a plan for him. So that is at 5:30.
On Sunday, yeah.
Yeah. What a weird weekend of fixtures.
Yeah. Tuesday, Chelsea, Spurs.
Yeah.
So far away. Sunderland.
That is the time for Spurs to get Chelsea, though.
Yeah.
The flip side to all the other scenarios is, like,
they're either going to get a wounded Chelsea or they're going to get a severely hungover Chelsea.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, Chelsea always bring it for Spurs. They probably hate Spurs more than any other club.
Even Chelsea, this band of dilettantes.
That's what I was going to say. Chelsea as an entity do, and Chelsea in the past have. These Chelsea players, outside of a couple, there's always
are a joke.
Yeah, they are. Like, I don't think they'll care too much about relegating Spurs. A couple of them will, of course. Reece James, I'm a huge fan of Reece James. There's always exceptions to the rule, but there's just the majority of the Chelsea squad, I don't think, will be getting themselves up for this as they would for any other game, you know?
Yeah.
Hopefully West Ham keep it alive anyway and keep the pressure on. We assume Arsenal is going to take care of business against Burnley and that the title race is done?
I don't think so. Like, there's just something about... Like, I thought that West Ham game, I was like, Arsenal will roll them over, and they didn't. And there's just something about, you know, these games where you have to just get over the line, where it can be really difficult. I just have a funny feeling. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think Burnley will maybe get a point, but they might make it difficult. They might make it difficult for a while.
I think, I think at this stage it would be an absolute disaster. It would be a disaster anyway. Disaster doesn't even do it justice, to be honest, if Arsenal didn't go and win the league here with the two games they have left. But I think you're right. In a sense, to a degree, that there might be a little worry at some point. Maybe not against Burnley, maybe against Palace. There's going to be nervy. I don't think they're going to go out and batter, score early against Burnley, win 3-0, score early against Palace, win 3-0. I'd be surprised if that happened.
Yeah.
Be surprised if that happened.
Could you imagine someone called Michael Jackson comes and stops Arsenal from winning the title?
The dance floor.
The
Emirates' dance floor, like Jesse
Lingard. In the weeks where that movie is at all cinemas, breaking all sorts of records.
Sound like you're going to advertise it there for me.
Yeah.
I predicted Jokeres hat-trick, flat track bully. And, oh, what a great signing he was with ripping his top off and going, yeah, we won the leg.
Yeah.
The fixture is Villa-Liverpool, 8 o'clock. That's the Friday night fixture. Man United versus Forest, 12:30 on Sunday morning. Brentford Palace, Everton-Sunderland, Leeds-Brighton, Wolves-Fulham, all 3 o'clock Sunday kickoffs. Newcastle versus West Ham, 5:30 on Sunday. And then that Arsenal-Burnley game is 8 o'clock on Monday night, live on Off the Ball. You can also, next day is Bournemouth versus Man City. And Chelsea versus Spurs. Mm. They're Bournemouth versus Man City, is that Monday night?
No, it's Tuesday. No, Tuesday. They're both Tuesday, yeah. One's half seven, one's quarter past eight. So you can get the best of both worlds there for a while. But fortunately for us...
8:15 kickoffs are a killer for them.
Yeah.
The early.
Yeah, you wouldn't understand it. No. You wouldn't get it. You're nodding along there like you know what me and Jared do. You know?
Inside the Odds, our Premier League preview show on Off the Ball in association with Novi Bet. We'll see you next week.
Inside the Odds on Off the Ball with NoviBet. Get up to 50% boost on all bet builders with NoviBet. Download and play today. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.